watch says 9:30, so good morning. Today is Thursday, August 15th, 2019, and the time is 9:30 a.m. We have a quorum of the Audit Committee. I now call this meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. The agenda items, first we'll have the review and approval of the minutes of the June 21st Audit Committee. But I have a comment here that if there is anyone wishing to address the commission during the time of public comment, please fill out a witness affidavit form and bring it to the front. And public comments on non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes and agenda items 10. So I already have one card here that we'll pick up after we talk about the budgets. So the first order of business is the approval of the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on June 21st, 2019. These minutes were circulated to the members in the agenda packet. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on June 21st, 2019?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Philip? Any discussion? Okay. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, the ayes have it, and the motion passes. I should note that Philip is here in lieu of Hector. Hector was not able to make it on time, and so we've asked Philip as vice chair to step in. Okay. So let's review the agency's activities, and we'll start with Commissioner Jones.
Thank you. With regard to the Sunset Commission recommendations on complaint rules, those are in process. We will be bringing them forward for adoption tomorrow at the Finance Commission meeting. The Workforce Commission audit of HR policies is completed. There were no findings. And I do want to give kudos to Antonia and her staff for the good work they've done in order to get keeping us in compliance. And with regard to McConnell Jones IT change management, I reserve my comments until after they've presented the report.
Moving on to the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner, the report is on page 19. The first item is an item that was outstanding from the prior year's internal audit, and we were working on some, this requires a change, a new build in our database, our regulatory platform, and this had had previously been targeted for 8/31, and the date's been pushed back just a little bit towards September 27th, but that's still on track, and we're making good progress on that. We pushed it in lieu of trying to work on some other projects that require more immediate implementation because of sunset changes, so we pushed it back just a little bit. But we're still on track to implement that. And then you'd see that in progress two items that we should be implementing September 1st, and those are essentially completed, just waiting for the new implementation date. And then I did not include IT change management audit because it's discussed later in the report. It's not really a future item anymore, so we'll get to that later. And then our Workforce Commission review is on the next page. There's just the certification letter that we got that they certified that our personnel policies and procedures are in compliance. And so we appreciate the work of our HR team and rest of the admin team to work on that audit and deal with the issues related to that.
Commissioner Cooper?
Ours is on page 21. The first one has to do with the complaint process, which is a recommendation from the Sunset Commission, as Commissioner Jones mentioned, and we will have that rule at this meeting today. Then the rest of it has to do with the IT change management report from McConnell and Jones, which will be submitted today, so I will also reserve my comments till that is done. And that's all we have.
Okey-doke. All right. Next, we have the discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's 2019 third quarter investment officer reports. Commissioner?
Yes, thank you. Antonia Antoff will discuss the investment officer report.
Good morning, Antonia Antoff, Savings and Mortgage Lending. Our report is on page 22. If you have a paper book, that page number is gone. But recovery fund balance as of the end of the third quarter is over $4 million. We had one maturity during this third quarter, and at the request of the committee, we have been looking into what's the best rates, and this bank offered us 3% for 24 months, so that was higher than the Treasury Safekeeping Trust ongoing rate, so we renewed that. And there were no payments made out of the recovery fund during the third quarter. If you have any questions.
What about the ones that matured in June that, you know, they've subsequently matured?
Yes. We ended up not renewing either one of these because the rates that they offered us were.
So are they in the safekeeping?
Now they are, yes.
Okay.
This is going to be reported during with the next
quarter
report. But yes, they offered us basically almost the same rate as trust offers for overnight repos, but for 24 months. So it was being with the rate is changing, we did not think it's prudent to do that.
Right, especially with the inverted yield curve at this time.
Yes,
I just wanted to make sure that. We don't have anything that says you have to go 24 months.
No, no.
So
this,
you could go
yes.
shorter if you wanted to.
True, yes.
Kind of thing.
Yes, of course, you know, the 24 months has been our term of choice from the beginning because we had them scheduled where they keep maturing. And so we keep the liquidity going. So every several months we would have a 24-month CD maturing. Of course, now we have very few, and the liquidity needs of the fund are not that big. But we are looking at the other periods. Of course, the longer periods give you the higher rate.
Not anymore. So. Not today.
Well, what I got for these two specifically in the maturity in June, that was the case. That the 24-month was the highest rate that was offered.
So the ones
the
that
bank.
Came in June, I thought we put into. The safekeeping trust.
Right. Yes, I'm saying what the banks offered me was the 24-month rate was the highest that they offered.
Okay. Okay. All
which
right.
was still
less
equal
than,
or
less
or less than, what
right.
trust is offering.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. It will.
The Office of Consumer Credit report starts on page 23. The first one is the Residential Mortgage Loan Originator Recovery Trust Fund. That's just normal activity that's rolling through that fund. So not much to report there. Ending balance $153,000. The TV report is on page 24. And again, it's really normal activity here as well. There's some nominal additions, but some earnings as well as a grant disbursement, but otherwise the fund still continues to be within compliance and perform as we have been hoping. We'll see what happens in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And then there was.
Okay. All right. Commissioner Cooper.
And for the guarantee funds, we have some activity, and I'd like to ask Russell Reese to come up to go over that activity.
Good morning, Russell Reese, Texas Department of Banking. I will try to be brief and give you an overview because it's every quarter is pretty standard, but there's certain ones I want to highlight for y'all. That would be on page 25, would be the first for the Texas Department of Banking. And this will be the trust funded recap for the third quarter. As you'll note on the book, market value, we're at $1.3 million. And therefore, we still have not assessed our industry a dollar per contract that's required until it goes below the million. That's probably been about the last 12 years that we've assessed the industry because it's maintained a 1 million plus status. However, I do want to point out on the deductions under the footnote one, the 500,000, that relates to a previous seizure that we talked about last time. It's a local funeral home here in Austin, Peel, which now, knock on wood, will be resolved. All consumers got restitution because they sold the funeral home. The individual no longer owns that funeral home, and therefore, that's probably the best result we could have hoped for because they did not have a permit, and so the guarantee fund would not have protected them if we weren't able to get restitution. Other normal activity, glad to ask any questions on that page 25 for page 26. That will be a recap of our insurance-funded prepaid guarantee fund. I will note that that's $600,000 plus. We're still assessing $1 per contract until it hits the $1 million threshold. Fortunately, we have not had a claim on that one since the inception of that fund. It does show $23,000 as an addition. I'd just like to point out it's a bridge from the second to the third quarter, $1 per contract. We had about $48,000 in the second quarter, so there was like $73,000 prepaid insurance contracts written that last year. Other than that, there's pretty much no activity. Any questions? Then page 27, that's just a recap of the investment report on the quarterly, the seized activity. I will note that Hernandez Funeral Home, we did seize it back in April. We're still working with their attorneys to get restitution for contracts that were unfortunately canceled without consumers' approval. But we're still in ongoing negotiation. I hope that the consumers will get full restitution for that. If not, that had a permit, so they will get the prepaid guarantee fund protection. Other than that, any questions related to those pages?
Okay, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2019 third quarter investment officer reports?
So moved.
Lori, second? That would be you.
Second.
Thanks, Philip. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. There are no opposed. The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Okay, next we have the discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's readoption of the investment policies.
And before we go over the individual policies, Commissioner Pettijohn has a little bit of preliminary information.
I have a report for you. pursuant to our investment policy, within 180 days or 6 months after a legislative session, we are to provide you with a report of any changes to the Public Funds Investment Act and highlight those changes for you. So that's what this particular document is. And there were two bills that passed that amended the Public Funds Investment Act. I would say that the focus of both of these really relates more to local school districts and how they are able to manage their investments. And in particular, the first one, House Bill 293, relates to investment training requirements and really has no applicability at all to the Finance Commission or its agencies. The second one made some changes related to authorized investments, and really there was two primary changes, and it relates to how they allow commercial paper as potential security on repurchase agreements, and as applicable, corporate bond investments by school districts. And so there's a few other mild changes in there related to commercial paper, where it might have state of maturity of 365 days rather than 270 days. And then there are some, I would say, otherwise, other than dealing with the authorization section as it relates to the corporate bonds for school districts. There's a study. Did you not get the backside?
Sorry.
Oh,
no.
My goodness.
I'll read yours.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, we'll take care of that. That's a problem.
Were the changes incorporated within
the changes
the
are all
policy.
Incorporated in the investment policy. All we just had, we just didn't give you the report,
it's
and
okay.
We'll get that added to the packet. But again, they were fairly minor. Thanks, Stephen. Give you a second to look at those. Study required of TEA. Again, everything on the back really relates to the school district.
Okay, so
probably not our business.
Right. So the
I noticed the consistent changes
yep.
among all of
yep.
the agencies of being the same. So I figured something had changed.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things I think and I'll let Antonio describe. But I think a few of the changes we were trying to change some language just to tighten it up a little bit, and then you'll see perhaps an addition under the repurchase agreement section of adding this 2256013, which is the allowing repurchase agreements to be secured by commercial paper. I mean, we all do our repurchase agreements through Safekeeping Trust, so that would be up to the really say Q Trust and how they did that, but we want our policies to be in compliance, so.
Okay. With that, do we want to talk about the changes that remain, starting with the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending?
Yes, and Antonio's going to discuss that. Thank you.
Antonio Antoff, Savings and Mortgage Lending. Our investment policy begins on page 28. We have in there red line version and and after that a clean version with all the changes accepted. The only substantive change that we are making in our policy is on page 29, towards the bottom, in the certificates of deposit and time deposits, we're changing the maturity period from not to exceed 60 months to not to exceed 36 months. In reality, we haven't gone over 24 months, but this will make it more in line with the other agencies. And you see the other changes are mostly, they're not substantive, just moving text from one place to another, updating the dates, and merging in unauthorized investments, merging items 5, 6, and 7 into one. What I wanted to add to our policy is our report for the required investment training from the investments officers. I just took it last Friday, so my certificate was not available when the book was put together, so I will give you a copy of that.
Did they pass you?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, of course.
All right.
Big test.
And that's pretty much all I have on the investment policy. If you have any questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Antonia.
Okay, the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner policy changes start on page 41. You have the red line version as well as a clean version. Very similar explanations. We did update the website for the Safekeeping Trust because they had a different title. You'll see on page 44, we added the addition of the section in compliance with the new changes to the Public Funds Investment Act. On page 45, we just had corresponding language to be consistent with the other agencies tightening up that language. So very, very similar. And then, as well, one of the requirements of the policy, like Esmel said as well, is to provide you with a report on our training. So I have that as well. It's not two-sided, so I hope we got it all. One of those is still kind of scheduled to be completed on Monday, but anyway, that's where we are.
And everyone's passing, so that's good. Oh, you passed even. Or are you the
one
that's scheduled?
I'm scheduled on
slacker.
I'm an online, so I'm still finishing it, but hopefully I'll pass.
Okay.
Everybody cross your fingers for me. Okay. My online stuff, you actually have to take a test.
Ooh, scary.
Okay, the Department of Banking policy, red line starts on page 57, so date changes and everything related to the legislative changes as mentioned earlier. The clean copy begins on page 67, and I'm going to ask for one change. If I could, on page 73 on the clean version, under investment officer, the language states one of the agency's deputy commissioners, and so we have, presently we only have one deputy commissioner, so I propose that the language be changed to what I'm handing out here. Basically states that the commissioner will appoint a primary investment officer and also a secondary investment officer if that primary is unavailable.
Okay.
And so if this is approved, I intend to do that after the meeting.
Okay.
So, and in addition.
Did you pass?
Do we have the additional handouts to Wendy? So, like the other agencies, our investment officers in training right now, Jesse and Stephanie, and then Stephanie is good, will be going at the end of this month. So, Jesse will be the primary, and we will have a secondary that will go through the training. So I'd like to recommend that approval in our language, please.
Okay. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's readoption of the investment policies with the addition of what Commissioner Cooper is adding to their policy?
So moved.
Okay, Lori?
Second.
Second, Philip. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it, and the motion passes. All right, discussion of impossible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending's Information Technology Change Management Program Audit Report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones, LLP.
Good morning, everybody. We have a lot to present to you today, and I've prepared a placemat for you to summarize everything that's in your books. The first item is our audit report for the SML's information technology audit. The focus on that was we were looking at policies and procedures and the evaluation criteria and the authorization and documentation to support any IT changes. And then we were also looking at the risk evaluations that were conducted before IT changes were made. The reason that we looked at IT changes across all three agencies was to evaluate, make sure there were processes in place to make sure that any changes to your information technology environment did not cause negative consequences to the agencies. And the scope period for each one of these, the three agencies, was September 1st of 2017 through February 28th of 2019, and we were also considering the current environment. So for SML, we had everything that we looked at. We internal control rating is effective, and we had no reportable findings for you, so therefore no recommendations on that report.
Okay.
So if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer those.
I just want to make a couple of comments. First, I wanted to thank McConnell Jones for their professionalism during the audit, and also I wanted to acknowledge Stephen O'Shields and his IT team for the work that they do to keep us in compliance. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? All right. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Department of Saving and Mortgage Lending's Information Technology Change Management Program Audit Report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones, LLP?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Philip? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, the ayes, aye. The ayes have it, and the motion passes. All right, next we have the discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending's 2019 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones, LLP.
So the 2019 Annual Internal Audit Report captures the information of activities that were completed by Internal Audit for 2018, along with some other required components according to the State Auditor's Office. So in essence, we completed the 2019 audit plan as approved, and then we are proposing for FY 2020 to conduct an audit of the investigations process. And we're going to focus on the policies and procedures documentation to make sure that controls and processes are in place to provide reasonable assurance the investigations are completed according to the agency's policies, and that also information is maintained to make sure that you're in compliance with your monitoring function and is operating effectively. We're proposing 115 hours in total for the audit plan, and that includes this audit plus the annual report and the risk assessment for next year. And the total fees would be $13,711. Do I have any questions on the proposed plan or report?
Okay, so So the internal audit report sets forth what you've done so far for, so you've completed everything that was supposed to be done for this year.
Correct.
And, all right. And the policies and procedures and all of that.
Correct.
Okay.
And so the annual report provides a summary of what was completed in the prior fiscal year, which is, in this instance, FY19, and what you propose to do in the subsequent fiscal year, which will be FY2020.
Okay, got it. All right, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending's 2019 annual internal audit report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones, LLP?
So moved.
Okay, Lori?
Second.
Philip seconds. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it and the motion passes. Okay, from a time, we're going to have to take a break at 10 for mechanical difficulties. So I think if we go through the OCCC, is that the next one? Is OCCC? Am I going out of order, Peter?
No, that's good.
All right, can we just go through probably the internal audit report?
Sure.
I think the other one will be a little bit longer, right?
Sure.
Okay.
So under OCCC, the Information Technology Change Management Audit had the same focus and scope as the SML. And from that, we actually gave this one a rating of some improvement needed, and we had three recommendations that were coming out of opportunities we identified. Two of those recommendations were high risk, and one was a medium risk. And the first one is that changes are being made and the processes are being followed that should be followed, but they're just not documented. So our recommendation there was to develop a management framework where you continue to document everything that you're doing so that if anything comes up in the future, you can go back and look at that documentation to see what really happened. The second one was the high risk, and that's the risk assessment was not being formally documented to determine what potential impact was going to be resulting if something was to go wrong with a proposed change. And then the third recommendation we had was to implement segregation of duties within the IT environment wherever possible. Management response adequately addresses our findings, and we really do believe that action will be taken to correct this in a very timely manner.
Okay, what about the comment about the individual previously assigned to manage information recently retired? Is that in your area? Or am I looking at the wrong report?
I think that's in.
Am I at the wrong report?
Really.
Mm-hmm.
In February, the end of February.
Okay. Is there any? It's all been picked up and it's
right. We had hired somebody ahead of time and we're training someone, and you know, we do, you know, we are still, you know, adjusting through that transition, but a lot of these changes were really not as closely tied to some of that area, but we were already in the process of a more formalized framework that was in development and had actually been implemented for one project, but it was after the scope period that they were looking at. So
seamless transition.
Yeah, so we're working through that, but it's
okay.
We may have
all
fixed
right.
It, but we won't know for two more minutes.
Yep. So any other discussion on this? All right, so do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Office of Consumer Credit Commission Information Technology Change Management Program audit report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones?
So moved.
Lori, is there a second?
Second.
Philip, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it and the motion passes. All right, we'll take a break now for
let's 30 seconds. For the people that are watching, if this computer might reboot and then you might have to reconnect. So just bear with us while we find out here for 1 minute.
Okay.
Just 1 minute, we'll find out if it's, because this thing said it'll reboot at 10 o'clock.
So for the people that are watching, if the computer reboots, you will have to
reconnect.
So we'll find out in about 30 seconds. Apologize for the delay.
I think we're good. Go ahead. go ahead and discuss it.
So we can move forward?
Yeah, we can move forward. It did not reach, we stopped.
It's up to y'all.
Man.
It's part of our change management.
That away.
Push out automatic updates on Thursday morning.
Is that what it is?
This is for bear with us.
Okay.
Need more minute, and we need to assess the risk.
Yes. Who approved that? I want to know who approved that. Okay, discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner's 2019 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones LLP.
Okay, so this again, it's capturing what we did in fiscal 19 and reporting what we proposed to do in fiscal 20. And so for fiscal year 2020, we're proposing to do an audit of the investigations process, where we're going to look at the leadership's teams, make sure that they have internal controls and processes in place to ensure that examinations are scheduled according to the cycle and that they're performed and reported in compliance with state and federal regulatory requirements and in the internal policies of the agency. Our scope of that will be staff training, the examination scheduling, how the examinations are reported, and the management reports and communications that are used to monitor that the investigation process. We're proposing that this audit's plan is a total of 149 hours, and the fees are $17,712.
Okay. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner's 2019 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones LLP?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Philip? Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Okay, you're on a roll, Lori. Let's have a discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Texas Department of Banking's Information Technology Change Management Program audit report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones LLP.
Okay, so the first report that we have for you for the Department of Banking is the Information Technology Change Management. Again, the focus and the scope was the same period. We rated this one that the controls were adequate, but there was some process improvement needed. We had five findings. Three of those were high risk and two were medium risk. Again, this is related to the controls. And the reason this didn't end up with some improvement needed is because during the scope period, things weren't being documented and processes weren't being completed. But while we were transitioning into the audit, there were other things that were happening that were already addressing what we saw after the scope period ended. So our recommendations, the first one is that segregation of duties needed to be implemented to ensure that individuals that have access to change the code and are performing changes, it's reviewed by somebody independent before it's actually put in production. We also have a high-risk item that all IT changes need to be communicated out to the organization. And then the procedures need to be updated to reflect what's actually happening within the agency. And we also, a high-risk item in the formal risk assessment needs to be done for every IT change that is made. We also said that the framework needs to be continued to mature, and it needs to be formalized in documentation that incorporates the roles and responsibilities and the authority to actually make the changes and sign off on them. Because what we found is that you have a policy in place for who's allowed to authorize the changes, but sometimes because of the urgency, those authorizations were not always being obtained up front. We'd be happy to answer any questions or discuss anything in the report.
So when were you guys on site doing your field work?
We would have been, this is August, June and July.
So why was the scope period not extended so you could pick up the changes?
The changes, so we actually started the audit earlier. And then because of the efficiency audit and everything else going on, we actually didn't come in and do do the physical walkthroughs until later. So we'd already confirmed with the agency the scope period, but we did look at what was happening after the scope period, and that's how we were able to say, well, this is what we saw, but now we see these changes.
But the report doesn't really give credit to the changes, right? I mean, it gives credit in the rating, you know, but I guess I didn't read anything in here that said, but they've taken care of it and it's fixed kind of thing.
Right. What we say is the IT department is currently implementing activities related to IT change management program, and it's not formally documented, but people, that everybody in their roles understands what needs to happen. They just need to move forward with it.
So it's not documented yet?
No, they were in the process of completing the documentation.
Okay. Okay. Any other comments or questions? Okay, do I hear a motion to, did you have any comments?
No.
Okay. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Texas Department of Banking's Information Technology Change Management Program audit report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones, LLP?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. Motion carries. Okay, next we have the discussion of impossible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Texas Department of Banking's fines, penalties, and restitution audit report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones.
Okay, so the second audit of the year for the Department of Banking was the fines, penalties, and restitution processes. And the purpose was to evaluate the internal controls and processes to make sure that the fines, penalties, and restitutions are set, that are assessed, are collected and accurately recorded and accurately reported. We looked at the policies and procedures. We also looked at the investigations, the documentation supporting the investigation, and the documentation of the fine being assessed and making sure it was being correctly recorded and that documentation is maintained. We also look at the management of the guarantee fund to make sure that it was in compliance with the requirements. And so our scope was, we narrowed it down to those enforcement orders that were currently on your website as of May 21st, 2019. And from that, we took a sample to make sure that the cases were documented and that the fines were in the system and recorded. We rated that as effective, and we had no findings to report. So when we were looking at everything, we did not assess whether or not the fine schedule is applicable to today's environment. We looked to make sure that what's on the schedule and what is being documented out of the investigation process supports the fine that was actually assessed and collected.
Didn't we have a finding at one point, Charles, that said that we had to do a better job of supporting the assessment of the fines? Like, was the fine appropriate?
Yes. I think in the Sunset Report, they made some recommendations, and we came up, we were in the process, actually, of coming up with a schedule. If this happened, and to make things more consistent, and so that's already in place.
But that wasn't part of your audit?
No, it wasn't.
All right. Any other comments or questions? All right. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Texas Department of Banking's fines, penalties, and restitution audit report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones, LLP?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Phila? All in favor? Any discussion? Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Okay, next we have a discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Texas Department of Banking's 2019 annual internal audit report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones, LLP.
Okay, so for the fiscal year 2019 annual internal audit report, we did complete all of the activities that were approved for the fiscal year 2019 audit plan. And we include the proposed 2020 internal audit activities. The first audit that we propose to perform is the information technology examination process. And what we're doing, propose there is to look at the processes and controls to make sure that there's reasonable assurance that the agency is measuring the technology risks and management practices in compliance with state and federal guidelines. And we're going to look at the audit cycle review, the work paper support documentation, and the audit scope of the examinations that are conducted. The second audit is what we're proposing is in the human resources. We're looking at the validation of hours. How do staff go about making sure that hours that are recorded by staff are, and what they're authorizing are accurate? We're going to look at the policies and procedures, look at the work hour recording, and how are those hours validated for monitoring status, especially with the employees that are telecommute and work off-site. So the total audit plans for hours for the whole plan for the year is 391 hours at a cost of $44,488. So between the three agencies, there will be 655 audit hours for a total of $75,911, and that's within the contracted value.
So do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Texas Department of Banking's 2019 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by McConnell and Jones, LLP?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Second by Philip. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it and the motion passes.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Next, there is a discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's 2019 third quarter financial statements.
Yes, Michelle. Thank you. Antonia Antal is going to present the financials.
All right. Antonia Antal, Savings and Mortgage Lending. Our third quarter report starts on page 153. And overall, our revenues are at 3.6% over budget, and our expenditures are 5.5% under budget. I have underlined the biggest variances, if there's explanations on the next page. I'll be happy to answer any questions on that if you have them. Yes?
I just have a question.
Sure.
And it's on all three of them.
Okay.
What is non-employee travel?
This is your travel.
My travel.
You are very
the Finance Commission members. Yes.
Okay.
This is the Finance Commission members' travel.
Just stick it to
Finance Commission.
Also,
it could be prospective employees too.
Yes, prospective employees. It could be also any advisory committee members that are eligible for travel reimbursements. In this current situation, the only non-employee travel SML has is Finance Commission member
travel. Okay, so it's prorated, I would say, because
yes.
Everybody has
yes.
it.
Yes,
correct.
Yes,
okay.
We split it, yes.
Right. Correct.
Any other questions on the third quarter numbers? Our liquidity report is on page 155. As of the end of the third quarter, we were at 9.2 months of reserves. And we will talk more about the reserves later in the later item. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. The hard charts for cash reserves are on page 156.
Okay.
So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to go into more detail.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, Christina, where Huckle provide the report for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner.
Good morning. My name is Christina Quire-Hoke. I'm with the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. Our financial statements start on page 157. Our revenues are at 104.7% of the budget. Our pawn interest is above budget in the third quarter due to the renewal period opening up early in May. Approximately 44% of renewals were received during that period. RAL assessment is above budget due to the increase in registrations for this industry that occurs around tax season, which falls in the third quarter. Creditor registration is above budget due to an increase in registered creditor applications for the third quarter. Our expenditures is at 93% of the budget. Travel expenditures are at 88% of the projected budget. Professional fee expenditures are below budget, mainly due to the deferring of Alex enhancements to the fourth quarter. In addition, only about half of the legal services budgeted has been expended. In addition, the funds for IT consulting, architect engineering, and other professional fees have not been used. Any questions? Okay. On page 159, our liquidity report, our unreserved monthly unreserved is 5.17.
Okay, Texas Department of Banking, I'd like to ask Sammy Chadley to come up and go over our results.
Good morning, Sammy Chadley, Department of Banking. On page 160 is our operating statement for third quarter, I'm sorry. Our revenues, our actual revenues are at 85% of our budget, and our expenditures are at 92.7% of budget. On page 161 is our overview of budget of variances for the third quarter. I'm going to go over three items. The first one, under bank and trust regulation, our actual revenues were less than budgeted due to the reduction in the third quarter bank assessments of 20% or approximately $1.3 million. The year-to-date bank regulation revenue is at 94.9% of budget and was adequate to cover all direct and indirect costs of the bank and trust area. Second item, the classified salaries and employee benefits. Our vacancies, as of May 31st, we had 17, 5 administrative and 12 in the financial examiner series. The administrative vacancies were basically we had two programmers, one administrative assistant, one law clerk, and one program specialist. And the last item is under telephone. We had a positive variance, and that is due to data line upgrade costs that were lower than anticipated. That's a VoIP migration that we had scheduled for fiscal year 2019. Any questions? And then the last page, 162, is our liquidity report, and our unreserved cash balance is at 4.19 months, which is within the 2 to 6 months liquidity guidelines. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. All right, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2019 third quarter financial statements?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Philip, second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it and the motion passes. Okay, next we have the discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's fiscal year 2020 operating budgets.
While Antonia Antoff comes up to give specifics, I want to make some general comments about the process. So the budget development process we use is according to our policy. We take into account the agency's vision and mission and short and long-term goals. We include in our budget decision targeting specific results and outcomes, and we provide incentives to employees and promote their wellness and develop professional development, and we have included input from the entire management team and other staff as needed. The proposed budget provides for 2.8% decrease in revenues and 1.8% decrease of expenditures compared to the budget approved for fiscal year 19. Proposed staff count is 58, which is two less than approved for last year. One is an administrative support position, and one is a financial examiner vacancy. Both of those are vacancies, and we're not budgeting to fill them. So with that, Antonia will go into some specifics, and we'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Antonia Antoff, Savings and Mortgage Lending. The budgeted amount for licensing revenues is 10% lower than prior budget due to a slight decrease in our individual RMLO licensing activity. In fiscal year 2020, we have not budgeted for changes in the licensing fees. The collected mortgage revenues will be sufficient to cover the total cost of the industry's regulation. For thrift revenues, we're budgeting to collect 2.7% more than budgeted in prior year due to expected growth in some of the markets that our savings banks operate. In fiscal year 2020, we will assess at 100% our approved maximum rates in 4 equal installments. The collected thrift revenues will be sufficient to cover the total cost of the industry's regulation. For fiscal year 20, we have budgeted 0 penalties so that no part of our operating budget hinges on the amount of assessed and collected penalties. For depositor interest, we have budgeted for an increase over prior year budget amounts based on actual amounts received during fiscal year 19. All of our funds are held in safekeeping trust, and the interest earned is from overnight repurchase agreements. On the expenditure side, our personnel costs category represents 67% of our total expenditure budget. Amounts budgeted for salaries and other personnel costs are 3.3% lower than budgeted for last year, because fiscal year 19 budget included $148,000 for retention bonuses. The budget provides for merit increases and promotions for multiple employees in an effort to reward good performance, remain competitive with state and federal counterparts, and encourage staff retention. The stability of our staff benefits the industry in both retained knowledge of departmental statutes, rules, and procedures, and also of specific regulated entities and their management. For travel, we're budgeting 1% less than prior's budget based on lower actual expenditures for fiscal year 19. Professional fees and services are 4.7% higher than prior budget, mainly due to increase for legal services provided by Office of Attorney General. The department's other operating expenditure have been budgeted at 6.1%, or about $20,000 higher than last year. The increase is mostly due to an increase of our information technology costs. During fiscal year 20, we have budgeted for scheduled replacement of computers for our field staff, as well as additional purchases of hardware and software. And our benefits for fiscal year 20 are decreasing 1% in line with the reduction of our staff count. In conclusion, at the end of fiscal year 20, we expect to have deficit of $447,000 that will be covered by existing cash reserves. And I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Antonia.
So the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner budget request is provided for you on page 165 and 166. And we're pleased to present this proposed budget for FY20, requesting $8,999,941 as our total amount of expenditures for the year. This budget request is for 87 FTEs, which is a decrease of 4 FTEs from the prior fiscal year. The proposed budget amounts to an overall 6.6% decrease from the FY19 budget. And key budget drivers for our proposed FY20 budget continue to be the industry market adjustments that we see, staffing stability, examination travel, and our information technology and cybersecurity needs. As we talk about industry market adjustments, we continue to see some dynamic changes in the market, including we still see a pretty significant amount of turnover within the industries and some consolidation. However, we still show overall number of licensees showing modest overall growth, with some of our markets contracting and some demonstrating stronger growth trends. So we've estimated this budget on an overall conservatively, pretty stable, just a very slight, like half of 1% continued growth of a licensed market. That's been consistent with our experience, and we think it's somewhat consistent with the economic outlook. It's hard to tell, but we believe that's a pretty conservative approach for this particular time frame moving forward. We continue to look at right-sizing our workforce to our regulated population. We've definitely gained some efficiencies in the last few years in our examination process, in the retention and the development of our examiner resources, the use of our new risk-based scheduling tool and some other technology tools that we're using. Through these durable increases in our efficiency, we've been able to propose this reduction of 4 examiner positions and still adequately support our necessary compliance responsibilities. Modeling on our proposed budget supports a performance target of 4,000 examinations, which is a small reduction of 5% of our prior examination target, but we believe that that's the appropriate level that's required to maintain compliance in the industry. As you know, we typically are having pretty high levels of compliance, but this target also contemplates the effects of our extended use of our training resources, some of the enterprise level examination activity we've been engaged in, and some realignment of our regional work distribution, as well as a sharper focus on our performance evaluation, goal setting, and compensation management. If we look at the overall effect on our licensees for this particular budget, it continues to anticipate discounts from the maximum assessment rates. The assessment rates and those associated discounts will remain the same as they were in the fiscal year 19 rate. We've evaluated these revenue projections across the various market segments in relationship to the resource requirements for each particular segment, and we believe that it fairly allocates resources among the market segments. The most noticeable item, I think, on our fiscal year 20 budget is the decline in revenue, and that's because it does not include the revenue for motor vehicle sales finance. We have a proposed action to the Finance Commission to realign the renewal dates for motor vehicle sales finance, and that would defer these renewals. The renewal deferral results in about a 15-month term this particular cycle, and will change the renewals from July to October. And so that's the effect here. It's really temporary only for fiscal year 20, and it's just a timing shift of 3 months and better aligns our revenue receipt with the fiscal year, so we would end the fiscal year not at a higher point in our cash flow, but at a more normal point across the fiscal year. So we think that that's a good change, one that we've done the cash flow modeling on. We think we can support it and will help help us better manage that cash flow. And with that, let me turn over to Christina for remaining details on the budget.
Our staffing stability. The proposed budget will provide the resources necessary to implement a staffing plan that enables the OCCC to meet expected workload and performance targets and attempts to optimize examination coverage at a level that focuses on improving compliance through efficiency and risk profiling. Salaries and associated personnel benefits in the proposal amount of 81% of the total budget, with travel comprising an additional 8.6%. The proposed salary budget funds the examiner career ladder with 13 planned promotions and other competitive actions designed for retention and increased tenure. Our information technology, the proposed budget funds the operations and maintenance for the cloud-based regulatory platform, ALEX, and also includes some additional development work to further enhance and refine ALEX. In addition, it expands the contract for managed service through DIR. It also includes an amount procurement of IT equipment in accordance with the agency's regular replacement schedule, along with $22,000 for new cybersecurity improvement through hardware and software. Further key items in the expenditure budget include travel expenditures for non-attestate examinations travel, which are estimated at $769,500. This estimate is a 10.8 decrease from the budget in fiscal year 19. This decrease reflects the reduction of FTEs within the exam department. This reduction also includes minimizing mileage costs of in-town by proximity, allowing examiners to be scheduled by licensee location. In addition, the Dallas-Houston region will be traveling out of town 25% instead of 50%. Professional fees are estimated at $250,000, which is an increase of 25.2% over the fiscal year 19 budget. This increase includes $50,000 for the Attorney General contract, $11,000 for the State Office of Administrative Hearings contract, auditor's fees, IT professional fees, and temporary staff services for an imaging project. Other operating expenses are budgeted at $491,000, which is about 12.4 decrease over the fiscal year 19 budget. Larger items within this classification include online payment fees and IT maintenance costs, both of which have been increasing. Benefits are estimated at $1.8 million, which is a decrease of 9.2% of the budgeted amount for fiscal year 19. The projected amount is forecasted upon an estimated personnel cost and benefit factor of 30% and retiree insurance costs of $229,500. Capital expenditures consist primarily of computers and information technology hardware that are part of the agency replacement schedule. Our fund balance, the budget proposes a deficit of revenues over expenditure. It assumes the adoption of the proposed rule modifying the renewal cycle for motor vehicle sales finance licenses. The agency anticipates 8 months of liquidity for the operating expenses at the end of fiscal year 19 and 3.8 months of liquidity for the operating expenses at the end of fiscal year 20. Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions for Christina? Thanks. And Molly asks that we go ahead and start with the Department of Banking.
Thank you. For first, I'd like to make a few opening comments and then turn it over to Sammy Chadley, our Director of Administrative Services, for more detail. But I'd like, the comment I'd like to make is, as you all know, for many years now, our stated goal is to keep our compensation for our personnel in the Financial Examiner series competitive with that of the FDIC. And specifically, our goal has been to be at least 95% of the FDIC counterparts. So for over many years, we have made strides in this area to achieve the goal, but I call them kind of baby steps. We couldn't do it overnight. But if this particular budget gets approved, I'm going to be very pleased with where we stand in this area. So in the budget, we are proposing to increase salaries at an average of 3.67%. The range is from 3 to 5% depending on the grade level. I'd also like to point out that this increase would include all eligible personnel. The other way that I like to look at the budget on kind of a simple basis is that before considering these salary increases that I just mentioned, if you look at our proposed budget, again, without these salaries, we are slightly down about 43 basis points. And also, we've been able to add positions because of increased efficiencies. But then when you add the recommended salary increases, our proposed budget increases by 2.58%. So we have letters of support for our budget from the Independent Bankers Association of Texas and the Texas Bankers Association that I would like to enter into the record. If all of these have been emailed to y'all, if you would like copies, we have hard copies of that. And I understand that Steve Scurlock from IBAT has been registered as a witness, so I'm sure he'll have some comments. So now, Sam, if you'd go over the details, please.
Good morning again, Sammy Chadley. In our budget process, each divisional area was tasked with creating their budget using historical, current, and forecast information and incorporating the strategic planning initiatives and agency priorities developed for 2020. Cost centers for each industry were reviewed to make sure each industry is covering its related costs. This proposed budget is based on the department conducting 825 examinations, processing approximately 311 applications, notices, and filings, and resolving 370 complaints. Our proposed 2020 budget has revenues projected at $29.6 million. This does not include $3.1 million in bank and trust assessments that are not expected to be assessed to operate a department. This assessment reduction will allow the agency to cover expected expenditures of $29.6 million with no additional contribution to our cash balance in 2020. So revenues, expenditures equal. Our assessments are approximately 89% of our revenues. Salaries is our major expenditure category and accounts for almost for most of the budget increase. Total salaries are estimated at $19.3 million and employee benefits at $5.8 million, and both of them account for approximately 85% of the budget request. Staffing increased by four positions from 190 to 194 FTEs. This increase includes two IT examiners, a network administrator, and an administrative position. I'm going to go over a couple of categories that are noteworthy. Sorry, you have a question?
No.
Okay. So between our 2020 budget and 2019 budget, we had our professional fees decreased by $96,000 due to a specialized training that was completed in 2019 and will not occur in 2020. And also, we have no contract programmers scheduled for 2020 since we were able to hire those in 2019. And we also have lower architect fees budgeted for 2020, about $10,000 lower. Our consumable supplies increased by $153,000 from 19 to 20, and that is due to the purchase of 60 new laptops and related accessories versus six laptops and related accessories for the previous year. And we do have a four-year replacement cycle for our computers. Telephone decreased by $34,000 from last year, and that's because last year's budget included migrations to voice over IP, and that VoIP migration was for headquarters in all four regions, and that was completed. That's done. Then we have, for our benefits, we have used 28.7% in this budget, and that's basically based on our data from 2019 on projections for 2020. In addition to that, we have there's an additional 1.5% mandated by the legislature. That's for payroll, health care, and retirement contributions. On our cash position, this year we forgave a total of $5.2 million. So we forgave $1.3 million in quarter three and $3.9 in quarter four. So that's $5.2 million. As we continuously manage our cash balance growth for compliance with the liquidity policy guidelines. Our anticipated unreserved cash balance at fiscal year end 2019 is estimated to be approximately $6 million or roughly 2.5 months of the 2020 budget. The 2020 budget keeps this unreserved cash balance within 2 to 6 months. That's basically the prescribed liquidity policy guideline. Any comments? Any questions?
So you have a balanced budget, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's balanced completely. So
mm-hmm.
wouldn't you expect the cash balance to stay at the level it is today? So it's like four or something.
Well,
right?
Yeah, it varies every quarter depending on when we forgive the assessments and we don't. So throughout the year, it'll range anywhere between 2.5 to 4.5 or 4.6 months during the year,
okay.
Depending on what happens every quarter.
Can I ask you a question about the regional offices? How long are those leases on those buildings?
The leases, they vary. The Facilities Commission manages those leases. I think for Houston and Dallas, we renewed them 3 years ago, and I think they're at least 3 to 5 years
okay.
for each one of them. And Lubbock has been existing for a while, and San Antonio has been existing for a while also. And I just, to close, I just like to thank, this was a group effort, and I'd like to thank Wendy Rodriguez, Lori Wright, and Krishna Jones for helping with this process.
So Sammy, before you leave, so make sure I'm saying this right.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the, our chair has been speaking to us over the years about making sure that we try to level out our assessments as
yes.
best we can.
Yes.
So and you mentioned that for this year, we did a forgiveness in the fourth quarter, forgiveness in the third quarter,
yes,
totaling
sir.
About $5 million. So our projection that we're doing indicates a 10%, I believe, in the each quarter, basically, and then in the fourth quarter, there'll be, that'll be where we catch up. But, Madam Chair, we are trying to give that forgiveness earlier in the budget period.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sammy.
Would this be the right time to ask Mr. Skurlock to make his comments?
Forty-two seconds. I'll be in trouble to do my best. If you can start the timer, that would be great. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Steve Skurlock. I'm with Independent Bankers Association of Texas. I am appearing very briefly today, 42 seconds plus or minus, to convey IBAT's support for the fiscal year 2020 budgets of the Department of Banking and the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. We have absolutely nothing against the OCCC and actually appreciate the relationship we have, Commissioner Pettijohn, with you guys and the work you do. But our industry simply doesn't fund that agency, so we are less engaged there. We have reviewed the budgets as posted on the websites and also had some additional information provided by the agencies. I do regret that for the first time in a number of years that at least one representative of IBAT could not be here for the no doubt informative and excellent budget presentation earlier this week. We normally make some very brief oral comments there, so you guys get to hear it today rather than that. As Commissioner Cooper indicated, you have copies, I hope, of our support letters for both agencies. We believe that both of the budgets reflect very reasonable requests and I think are indicative of the longstanding historical efficiencies and fiscal responsibilities that both of these agencies have exhibited. We obviously continue to strongly support adequate funding of the important work these agencies do for our industry and our state. And we very much appreciate the flexibility and multiple positive outcomes of SDSI status for all of these agencies. We are fully aware of the important work this commission does, and we very much appreciate the relationship not only with the Finance Commission, but also with all three of the agencies under your purview. We also appreciate the transparency of the budget process. And the ability for us to be involved and engaged in that. I would be happy to attempt to answer any questions, and probably was a little over 42 seconds, but not much. So thank you for listening.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve.
And then I want to note that you have entered in.
Yes, Madam Chair, for the record, I appreciate the reminder from the Department of Banking about letters of support, and I neglected to mention that we have four letters of support. I believe at least one more on the way from various trade associations, the Texas Consumer Finance Association, the Texas Property Tax Lien Holders Association, the Texas Independent Automobile Dealers Association, and the Texas Pawn Coalition.
And Madam Chair, if I may do similar, Commissioner Cooper mentioned that IBAT had sent a letter, and as did Mr. Skurlock, for both agencies. SML also received a letter from Texas Bankers Association, which the commission has been provided a copy of.
Right.
And we may have additional tomorrow.
Everybody's supportive, so that's a good thing. All right, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's fiscal year 2020 operating budgets?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Second by Philip. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. And the motion passes. Okay, next we have the report on activities related to Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's on page 169. However, before I get into the detail in this report, I first need to report to you on personnel changes associated with the folks that have been working with for us so well on the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund for the last couple of years we've had, or a year or two. Juan Garcia has resigned from the agency and has left us, and he was overseeing some of the activities related to this area. And then Deandra Sullivan, who I think you saw, she presented at the meeting last, at the last Finance Commission meeting, has also resigned. She's left us and gone to do more work on grants for the University of Texas at Arlington.
Oops.
And so we're sad to lose both of them. So in the meantime, we've got a couple of folks that are working in this area right now that are on staff, Kimberly B.O. and Christine Graham will be doing some of the detailed work related to TIFI. They both bring strong skill sets, and I think will do a great job related to this. They've been meeting already, trying to get information and make sure that we continue on sort of without any hitch through the transition. The 2021 application was posted out on the TIFI website on July the 25th. The deadline for applications is September the 20th, so that's coming up fairly soon. So we'll be looking at the new procedure, the new process for the new grant cycle coming up here this fall pretty quickly before the October Finance Commission meeting. So we're excited about that, and it's a new opportunity, and got some folks who will have some new opportunities to grow in that area. And then we're still working through normal reimbursement reports and reviewing those, monitoring those, and approving those for reimbursements for the current cycle. You'll get a summary of those as planned at the October meeting.
Okay. All right. So next, we've got the discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Department of Saving and Mortgage Lending's contribution of $750,000 to the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund.
And Antonia will present that.
Antonia Ant of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Our estimate is that at the end of the fourth quarter, we're going to be at a little over 7 months of reserves, which brings us closer, but not quite in compliance with our policy, with the liquidity policy. So we are recommending to transfer $750,000 to TIFI, and that should bring us at or under 6 months of reserves at year end.
And I want to add to that, as we've said before, another reason for contributing those funds is to be a participant in our oversight board's foundation.
And so at the end of?
As of August 31st.
Okay, you'll be at or below the six.
If we transfer this amount, yes. Okay. That's our best estimate.
Okay. All right. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yep. Okay, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending's contribution of $750 to the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Second by Phila. Any other further discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Okay. So next we have the discussion and possible vote to determine whether or not we renew or go out for proposals for internal auditor function for the Finance Commission agencies for fiscal year 2020. So we have at this time the opportunity to continue on with McDonald, or we can go out for RFPs, of which they'll be a part of the RFPs. Is there any comment or question regarding that?
Madam Chair, I suggest we make another request for proposals to make sure we're competitive in the marketplace. As a state agency, I think that's just prudent for us to do that.
So with that being said, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission issue a request for proposal to select an internal auditor for the Finance Commission agencies for fiscal year 2020?
So moved.
All right, Lori?
Second.
Second by Philip. Any other further discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Okay, there being no further business, the meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas is now adjourned, and the time is 10:48 p.m. a.m.